Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast, brought to you by Harvey Norman's bonus wine offer on Selected Electrical.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Wayne Carey. Last night, the Hawks 27-11, 173, nine multiple goal kickers. Far, far, far too strong for a tough night for the Carlton Footy Club, 4-11-35. The game was just sort of meandering along in the second quarter. The result was not in question. And then my man, the King, rolled out this on Channel 7 Football.
Just having a look at Sam Mitchell healing, I want to ask you a question. Would he get a game at any other club?
Now, yes, he's all 17 other clubs.
He would get a game. I think he's a champion of this club, but the fact that his pace in and around the footy, I think that's why he's still such a good player, because they're such a good team. I think in any other team, his pace would be a concern.
Sam Mitchell responded after the game on Triple M Footy last night, as the internet was actually blowing up Kim Kardashian style. This is what Mitch had to say.
I don't really know what to say about
you
that.
You don't have to say anything, mate. I think it speaks for itself.
He could certainly... I can't exactly come back with the same thing. He's probably one of the greatest couple of players that's ever played the game. So, I'll work on my speed, I guess.
He didn't seem that concerned about it in the rooms after the game. All right, Ducky boy, the floor is yours. Did you think about what you said beforehand? Do you stick by it? Was it a premeditated? Was it something popped into your head? Were you misquoted? Have people taken it the wrong end of the stick? Please speak.
Okay. It was, well, certainly wasn't premeditated. I watched Sam a little bit in the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks. He's been getting his 30, 35 possessions, and it was just something I watched him closely last night, and on a couple of occasions, it's all about, for me, not about Sam Mitchell being a champion player and still a champion of this game. My question mark was, it was all to do with his pressure in and around the footy. So what he does off the ball, and when you're playing in a lesser team, those things are obviously more important. You can't run to position before you win the footy. So he has the utmost confidence in his teammates to win the footy. So he then gets into position. So it was just all about his pressure. You know, if he was in a lesser team, obviously that'd be more important. You can't run to position. You have to put more pressure on yourself. So in no way am I suggesting that Sam Mitchell, like I said, is not still a great player and still playing some fantastic footy. But the simple facts are that part of his game is non-existent. And
which part of his game is non-existent?
The pressure part of his game. Now, there are plenty of people out there that have jumped on the bandwagon, and there are plenty of people on Twitter, which is great. And it's an opinion. It's an opinion business. I guess I'm not going to sit there and not say something that I observe, because of the fact that everyone else just goes along for the ride and doesn't say anything. And basically that they don't say anything because they don't want anyone to think wrong of them.
Oh, I think it's fantastic that you gave your opinion. Did you think you rolled it out?
Probably didn't come out exactly how
that
I would have
question.
Exactly how I would have liked it to come out. And like I said, I'd be more than happy to sit here with Sam and I've spoken to people in the last couple of weeks. I've spoken to Hawthorn people, and it would be fair to say that that's not the strong part of his game. The strong part of his game is reading the play, getting the ball. He got behind it last night. He picked up 35 possessions, but I don't know. You're a Hawthorn supporter. Were they 35? You know, I guess great possession. When you win by that amount. I guess it's easy to pick up a lot of the ball.
Listen, you know far more about the game than me. And the question you used to ask me, I've been thinking in all seriousness myself the last couple of months that Mitch is playing the best footy I've seen him play, due to the fact that he has that ability to stop in traffic and, to me, use it. Now, I'm not talking about his defensive side of the game. I'm talking about his attacking side of the game and his ability to use the ball and his ability to hit targets inside 50.
At the start of the game, Howie, and this is what people...
I love it when you ask me comment, my opinion, no, and then you just have no, absolutely no,
no, no, no
because
I'm about to back that up. I'm about to back up what you just said. So at the start of the game, in the first quarter, there was a piece of play coming out of the defensive 50. Mitchell got hit with a ball on about the 50-metre line. Now, I made sure the boys down in the truck held that bit of vision, and we didn't get a stoppage for about 5 minutes. And they said, "Do you want me to play it?" I said, "Absolutely, I want you to play it," because it showed Mitchell's creativity and the way, and the when he wins the footy, the decision making that he does puts his Hawthorn players into gaps that no one else does, and that's his brilliance. That's what he brings to the table, and that's what he continues to bring to the table, and that's why he is a champion. So I made sure they showed that vision. Then it wasn't until the second quarter when I made the comments that I just noticed in and around a couple of contests, Carlton players just walking around him and his lack of pressure on those players. It was a comment off the back of that. And then thinking, okay, so if you're in a lesser team, and we've seen Brad Scott recently put Boomer Harvey in a green vest because of his lack of pressure. Now, clearly, North Melbourne are not the team that Hawthorn are, so that doesn't get covered up quite as much. But once again, I stand by the fact that that's not a great part of his game. Would he get a game at 7-11? Of course he'd get a game, but would he be under more pressure to be making more pressure acts? I absolutely stand by those comments, and certainly there's never, and I said numerous times last night, I'm not questioning, and I'll say again, I'm not questioning that he is an absolute star and continues to be a star. I'm just saying that that part of his game gets covered up by being in a very, very, very good team and maybe a three-peat champion team.
Can you just indulge me a touch? Hive's given it the wind-up, but there's a couple of things I need to get through. It blew up Twitter last night, and a hashtag getting around, hashtag
very humorous.
The duck says. Can I just roll a couple out just to entertain myself and the audience?
Well, we read these out last night.
Yeah, but it's more entertaining when I do it than those clowns that you had on Channel 7 last night. Patrick Dangerfield, Steve Smith is an average cricketer and wouldn't make England's test side. Hashtag things the duck says. Chris Paul, drafting Richard Tambling ahead of Buddy was a good move. Hashtag things the duck says. Shatkins, Bronny Bishop is a hard-working, honest Aussie battler. Hashtag things the duck says.
Hey, there was also one last night. Gary Ablett Sr. couldn't play in a key position.
Hashtag things the duck says. The cast of upcoming Celebrity Apprentice is of the highest quality ever gathered. Hashtag things the duck says. What else have we got here? I want to go on. Global warming is a positive change for our environment. Hashtag things the duck says. Yeah. I like this one. Sydney house prices are still affordable for the average Joe. Hashtag things the duck said. And my personal favourite from Peter Phoebe, Shane Watson made the right choice to go for the DRS there. Hashtag things. One more. Hey, Bruce, I don't think we pay enough notice to Cyril. Hashtag things the duck says. And finally, exposed Dynabolts are a great innovation and should be introduced at all AFL venues. Hashtag things
the duck
says.
I tell you what we shouldn't be, certainly shouldn't be kept quiet, Howie, about talking about champions of our game because it's like who shot Bambi.
That's right.
Because he's a champion, you can't pick out a flaw in his game, which is, you know, a little bit sad.
Robert Allenby.
It's certainly not going to slow me down.
Robert Allenby is just misunderstood. Hashtag thing the duck says. And the final one, as we start going to a song next, we're talking to Adam Peacock from the MCG. Bernard Tomic sounds like a quality bloke.
By the way, you missed one. You missed one. There was a good one last night. Ronaldo wouldn't get a game in the A-League.
Hashtag thing the duck says. Gary Duck, as a little bloke growing up in the country, Dad used to drive me down to Waverley to go and watch the Hawks, and he would say, listen, if you want to know where the ball's going and where you need to be, just follow the bloke in the long sleeves.
Well, you got to follow him for a fair while.
Yeah, exactly. His name is Michael Tuck, and I don't say this lightly. It's great, and it's a bit of an honour to have Michael Tuck on the line, the game's record holder. He joins us now. Good morning, Tucky.
Yeah, how are you?
Oh, fantastic. How are you? By gee, you've been on Media Street this week, Tucky.
No, yeah, so it sort of came back to flavour when the old 400 club came into play, but no, it's been very good, really, in one way, but yeah.
There's been discussions about Boomer and whether he should go on next year. Obviously, you think it's time for him to pull up stumps at the end of the year, Tucky, just to preserve the record?
It'd be nice. To be honest with you, if you lost, it'd be sort of disappointing, but these things happen anyway, life goes on, but a lot depends what Scotty and the North Melbourne brain trust think, because let's face it, I'm not getting any younger, and North sort of was supposed to be doing a lot better than what they have been, according to all the experts early in the year. And Scotty's got to look after his job too, so it's up to them to decide what's the best for the club, basically.
Tucky, it's interesting because you've obviously been through it, and talking to Hawthorn people over, I guess, the last week, because there's so much talk around Boomer, that people said there were different stages during later in your career, that there were times where people thought you might have retired, and then you kicked on for another 4 or 5 years, and then they said, oh, he might retire now, and you kicked on for another couple. Was that the case, and did you think you had another year in you?
Oh, whatever it was, I had a detached retina in my left eye, which lost a bit of sight in the eye, and I sort of lost a lot of form. Would have been around 84 when we played Death in those finals and that. And then a lot of people thought I'd be retiring with Lee Matthews and Peter Knights, but the club sort of kept me there. And actually, the next year I made me captain, I don't know why, but anyway, probably because I was the oldest bloke there. But anyway, yeah, so that sort of gave me a new lease of life and hung in there for probably probably five more years, basically.
About another 200 games and four more premierships in 86, 88, 89 and 91. Tucky, do you sit back now and, you know, we talk about the Hawks at the moment, and if they have another win this year, there'll be four-time premiership players. You've got seven premierships, Michael. It's an extraordinary record. I think you had 302 AFL wins, which is the most in anyone's career. You need a little bit of luck as well to be playing for the right team, but it's an incredible record, Tucky, seven premierships.
Well, it is actually, to be honest with you. I sort of reckon I've had two careers, because when I started in the 70s, we had Lee Matthews, Peter Knights, Don Scott and a few of the other boys, and then I was fortunate to be at the club when the 80s started with, say, Ayrsie Langford, Dunstall, Dermot, Chrissy Mew, Pritchard, all, you know, just a lot of very, very good footballers, and that sort of, they sort of had their own little career. So basically I was fortunate enough to be, had two careers. So that's the difference. And the thing is that when you play 39 finals games, which works out to be nearly two more years of football, so that sort of made it up. Otherwise, I probably would never get to 400 technically.
Tucky, what would be your advice to Boomer if there was a little bit of self-doubt? It doesn't seem to be from Boomer's point of view, but a little bit of self-doubt. What would your advice be? Would it be, go on, you're a long time retired?
Oh, basically, it's probably, I'm not the man to give the advice technically, but I wanted to go on, but the club thought after winning a grand final and then I've done enough, so it's best to go out on a high note. But Boomer sort of, after he wore the jacket the other week, and just because of disciplinary reasons, someone told me that, I don't know if it's true or false, but, and then you're doing that when you played 400 games, surely you should know what's going on. So basically, I can play as long as you can, but it's really, sometimes you can't walk, the club has got to sort of help you out sometimes. So basically, it's really up to the club and him to work it out.
Tucky, you listed some of those wonderful players you played with. Two-part question. If there was one player that you could pick from all those Hawthorn teams to run out with, who would it be? And secondly, who's the current Hawk that you love going to the footy to watch play? Tough one, I know.
Well, probably Lee Matthews, because I played with him so much and he was a brilliant footballer and very tough and very hard. Probably one of the fairest blokes that ever played, I think. Anyway, but then probably Hodgie now would be the one, because he seems to just be in the right place at the right time all the time, basically, when he has to be. But in, when you're in a good side, it makes it a bit better too, so it's quite good. It was interesting to hear Wayne last night on the TV talking about one of the other players, but I'll leave that one alone.
Oh, you can weigh into it if you want, Tucky. No, we had a bit of fun with it this morning.
It's interesting that you pick Lee Matthews and Luke Hodge, both captains of the club, both tough. You know, just fantastic leaders of the footy club. Now, you're still working as a plumber, is that right?
Yeah, you're still doing a bit, yeah. Working probably most of the time, but if I have a couple of days off, it doesn't really matter. But I've just sort of, yeah, still doing a bit, trying to work out my super, and then I enjoy working to a certain degree. Like, you get bored if you just sit around doing nothing all the time, and you can only play golf so much and only go fishing so much. So.
And how is the body, Tucky? 426 games in. I've done stories with some of your teammates before, like Gary Buchanan, who's had all sorts of problems with his knees and players like that. How have you held up? That wiry build, well, it works for you. It works for Dustin Fletcher.
Yeah, well, actually, to be honest with you, I had a knee op probably a couple of years ago, mainly because I had a bit of wear and tear. But anyway, the doctor, who was Peter Wilson, who's the orthopaedic surgeon at Hawthorn time, he said my knee's went in bad nick for what I've actually done. So my body's not too bad. I've got a bit of a stiff neck and a bit of a crooked back, but nothing to really sort of put you in a bloody wheelchair or anything like that. So I've been very fortunate in that way. No, I'm pretty good, really.
I think that stiff neck's from wearing those seven premiership medals around all the time, Tucky. Hey? Like,
it'd be like Mr. T.
That's right. Hey, Michael, as I said at the start, I grew up watching you play footy, and Dad always said, go and watch the bloke in the long sleeves because he's a star. And I think Dad was a little bit annoyed when things came to pass at the end of the 91 season. So it's a great treat to chat with you, and may business keep going well. Maybe you see the Hawks win plenty more premierships, and we really appreciate your time. And for mine, may your record stand a long time.
No, thanks very much, and thanks for having me on the show.
Great to speak to Michael Tuck. What a legend. Seven premierships, Ducky boy.
In 426 games.
Duck, obviously a big story this week in Jay Bay, where we go now to South Africa to speak to a man that operates one of the local surf schools there, Dane Morris. He joins us from South Africa. G'day, Dane. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, Dane, it's been an incredible story around the world, and obviously here in Australia with Mick Fanning. What's the last five or six days been like for everyone in Jeffreys Bay?
Well, the surfing, it's been pretty uncrowded, which is kind of good for like some of the surfers. And then there's obviously a lot of surfers that are still haven't been back in the water. I've been back in once, and it was extremely nerve-wracking. But it's something that you just got to keep going back out, and you'll kind of get over it. But yeah, there's been a lot less surfing, and obviously everyone's got their own take on what happened, whether you got attacked or whether it was just playing with him. But yeah, everyone's slowly getting back into the water, and I'm actually having a look at supers right now. There's two guys kind of sitting really close to each other. So I'm going to probably wait for a few more guys to paddle out. I think the more feet in the water, the better.
Dane, I was watching on the coverage, and about 20 minutes later, the lineup was clear, and then I saw guys slowly start to paddle out. I'm talking 25 minutes after the incident. For you yourself, and you're sitting there on the edge of that magnificent break, I'm sure it's been nice this week. Did it take much for you to jump back in there?
It does, hey? Those guys that paddled straight out, I think it was Derek Hind and another guy called Remy. I don't know, they're obviously a bit nuts. But I haven't been back in the water yet. But I'm looking at going back in today. I think you just got to get back in. That first time back in the water is going to be a bit scary, but it's something I love. I'm not going to stop surfing because of it.
Dane, you were watching the final from the beach. How did it look from there?
Yeah, I just actually got back from the bathroom, and I was just, there wasn't many waves. I was having a look out, and I just saw kind of splashing. I thought Mick might have started paddling for a wave, and then I just saw more splashing, and I realized, oh my word, it has to be a shark. And then I just saw him kind of kick around and splash, and then a bit of a wave came, so he disappeared.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh man, he's in big trouble. And then he kind of popped up, and as you checked, he kind of swam in, and then I thought the shark was going to come for him again. And it's just so lucky that it didn't. But also, the main thing I remember is Julian paddling straight for him, and I was like, wow, you know, that guy's got guts. But it obviously happened really quick, and before you knew it, I mean, there were girls crying around and people were freaking out. So it was pretty scary.
Dane, we were speaking earlier on the show, myself and the great man here, Wayne Carey, about how Jay Bay is one of the great spots in the world. It's very friendly. It's got one of the great right-hand point breaks in the world. Are people going to keep coming in the short and long term, or do you have concerns about the tourism industry because so many people around the world have seen this vision?
For the short term, I know, for myself, my business is taking a bit of a knock. A few people have cancelled surf camps and that kind of thing. But I know as this has happened before with the fatal attack a couple of years ago, it takes a few months and everything kind of comes back to normal. But being that this is live international all over the world, I think a lot more people are going to kind of second guess coming here. Saying that, a lot of the locals are not stoked about it, but they're like, oh, cool. Well, there's going to be empty lineups and more waves. So, it's kind of a tough thing. You just kind of have to wait and see what happens, I guess.
Hey, Dane, listen, we really appreciate your time. You said you're going out for a surf shortly. I'm sure it'll all end up perfectly for you. Best of luck, mate, and may that shark bugger off and never come back.
I hope so. Thanks a lot, man.
Dane Morris from Jay Bay. I think we need to do a Howie's Tours on Jeffreys Bay. It's a beautiful part of the world, Ducky Boy.
Yeah, well, I've been to Cape Town, Howie, but I haven't been to, halfway, but that's halfway between Cape Town and Durban.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
Listen to you.
Well, I haven't been there, but I've done a little bit of travelling around South Africa.
So we might go there next week on Howie's Tours. Ach, my friend, you need to get yourself a Castle Lager and have a braai and get that braai stoked up, my friend.
Who were you doing there? Sort of accent?
Sort of half India, half Ireland, but I thought it was very good South African, my friend. The Ducks, some big games coming up for our Australian women's basketball team, the Opals. They're trying to get through to Rio, where they need to take on New Zealand in the Oceania series. The winner will qualify for the Olympics. But before that, they've got a three-game series kicking off this week in Dandenong, Frankston and Ballarat. That's Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Dandenong, Frankston and Ballarat, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Get along, and you'll get to see our next guest in action. Her name is Sarah Blitzar. She joins us now. G'day, Sarah.
Hello, how are you going?
Yeah, very fantastic. Good. Wonderful to speak to you. It's a massive couple of months for yourselves and the Opals with that sort of dream of Rio down the line.
Yes, it is. It is. And playing Japan is pretty good preparation for us versus New Zealand. And, yeah, if we beat New Zealand, then we'll be going to Rio, which is pretty exciting.
Now, Sarah, I know it's a little bit of a new look because Lauren Jackson and also Penny Taylor, they've got obviously injuries at the moment. Are they any chance of getting up?
For these games, no, I wouldn't think so. But they'll definitely be there for Rio. I'm sure they'll be pushing it.
Sarah, tell us a little bit about your career. You're a proven player in the WNBA, the SEABL. You've sort of made the step up to international duties now. It's going beautifully for you.
Yes, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I'm just playing SEABL at the moment for Geelong and WNBL for Dandenong. So I've been fortunate enough to be given opportunities this year with the Opals, and it's amazing how much you improve just by spending a week with them. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy with how I'm going. Still got a lot to work on, still got a lot to develop, but, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
And, Sarah, was that a conscious decision to really choose the ritzy towns, Geelong and Dandenong, to follow up your basketball career?
Well, I guess like 2-3 years ago, I actually wasn't that keen on basketball. And I just wanted to, I know. I was on the verge of quitting, actually. So I just wanted to go somewhere that would be fun. And, you know, I get on really well with my brother Mark. So I thought I'd just go live with him and go play for a team up there. And it actually really helped. And, yeah, I built my love for basketball again. And I guess I just love the kind of country towns too, because the whole city's behind you. And, yeah, it's just a good feel over there.
Sarah, do you have the same running ability?
Oh, yeah, look, I think I'm actually better than Mark. So. No, I used to do it when I, because Mark and I and my oldest brother, Chris, who's probably listening to this right now in the kitchen.
Hello, Chris. What's he do?
He's a basketballer as well, but he's a PE teacher too.
Okay.
Yeah, so we all used to run when we were younger, and very, very competitive family. And, you know, of course I'm going to say that I was the best runner out of everyone.
So Mark might end up, although he's doing great things, I actually wrote an article about Mark this year. I think he's been one of the most improved players in the comp, but he might end up being the disappointment, the only one not to go to the Olympics.
Oh, Chris in the kitchen's not doing much at the moment.
I'm taking Chris out of the equation.
Unless he's on MasterChef. Chris, your dad.
Sorry. Even I'm the better cook, so.
But Sarah, you're not going to get halfway through this campaign and then just jump off and decide to take on another sport like happens in your family, are you?
Yeah, I know, right? It's common, isn't it? Yeah, I might just quit and go to netball or something.
What do you need to do to cement your position in the side? Because as we said, the Olympics, well, it doesn't get any better. Australia's had a great history, quite a few silver medals in recent times. So if you get there, you'll be at the pointy end of the competition if all goes well, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very tough. My position is a 2-3 man, which I guess is like a shooting guard. And there's a lot of people who are very talented who are all going for that spot. So I guess you just got to find something that differs yourself from everyone else. You know, and I'm just trying to improve all aspects of my game and then hopefully, you know, try and develop something that other people don't have.
Sarah, give me a beep test figure. I need to know.
A beep test. Oh God. I might have to bump it up a couple of beeps. Last time we actually did the yo-yo test, but last time I did the beep test was in year 7, and I got 12 something, I think.
Okay.
Well, that's year 7. That was ages ago.
Well, I'm sorry, because if you're watching Channel 7 football last night, Duck thinks you're slow, and
Can I ask? Yep. I've got a question.
Oh,
why are you called the Duck?
Oh.
Yeah,
I'm putting
it
back on you. I don't know.
No,
I want to know.
I used to waddle when I ran, so I didn't have the same running ability as you, Sarah.
I was going to say, there you go, so you can't compare.
No, I was just all about the waddle.
That's a great question. Well, I've got one finally for you. We were just watching the promo for LeBron's new film, Trainwreck. Our producer, Hyphen, said if we get LeBron on next week, he will, I quote, wet myself. Have you got a number for LeBron James that you could pass on to us or not?
A number?
Yeah, it's a phone number so we can get hold of him. You being a basketballer and all?
Oh, of course. Yeah, we can tee it up after this interview.
Oh, fantastic, Sarah.
Looking forward to it.
Look, if you come in and get LeBron on next week, that'd be great. Hey, listen, best of luck for you, all your family, and your dad, brother in the kitchen.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll see you in Rio, if not before. Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right, thank you, guys.
I didn't know why you were called the Duck either.
Didn't you?
No.
No, it's not that exciting,
no,
is it?
No, it wasn't. But how good was she? Oh, we need to get fantastic. Sarah on again. Ducky boy, last night the Hawks 27-11, 173. Absolutely destroyed Carlton 4-11-35. Our next guest, 106 goals, 208 games. As a small forward, he's kicking.
You mean 106 games, 208 goals.
Is that what I not said?
You said it the opposite.
Well, I've halved his tally then, haven't
yes,
I?
Yes, you have.
So therefore he joins us on the phone, probably a little bit unhappy. Lukey Bruce. Hello, Lukey.
Hey boys, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Fantastic. How was the game last night, mate? It's a broad question, but I sat in the crowd last night, 25,500 people there, and even Hawthorn fans seemed a little nonplussed by it all. It was a strange game of football, Brewsty.
It was, yeah. So I guess early on they probably challenged us a little bit, and then it took a bit of pressure from Cyril and then a Hodgie goal to kick us into gear. And then from then on, I thought we controlled the game and sort of played the way we wanted to play and got it on our terms, I think.
Is it hard for the eyes not to light up when, when you're kicking so many goals? Obviously, you've got so many good players up there and you use usually the best option. Is it hard not to just want to get in front of the sticks and kick a big bag?
I guess it is. It does sort of, as you said, the eyes do light up when we are kicking a lot of goals like last night. But at the same time, we know that you're not going to get games like that in the rest of the season and then into finals. So we try to stick to the way we want to play and continue to just give that first option and play sort of trademark footy that we want to play.
Yeah, that's it. That's a nice company answer, Brewsty. But let's be honest, you copped a heavy knock yesterday and I was down on the bench and they came over and they tried to give you the concussion test, Ducky. The Hawks are on fire. Never have you seen a man so keen to get out on the ground as our man Luke Bruce. You're all okay this morning, mate? It was a pretty big knock.
Yeah, no, all good. The doc wanted to get me straight off and I told him that I wanted to kick the goal. So, all good this morning. So, a bit of a headache last night, but all fine this morning.
Now, mate, you played some pretty good footy over the last couple of years. Obviously, two flags. But do you think you've played better than the last 3 weeks?
Oh, it's a good question. Obviously, the grand final last year probably sticks in your memory in terms of how well we've played. But certainly the last 3 weeks, I guess, has rivaled that, and the way we've been able to sort of put four quarters together and sort of just dominate sides the way we have, and especially quality teams like Sydney and Fremantle, who we know will bounce back and are going to be very tough to beat in the finals.
Speaking to Luke Bruce, Brewsty, I want to ask you, because about 7 weeks ago, there was a change in the way that you went about playing. There seems to be a lot more handball through the middle of the ground, a lot of short, sharp stuff, and you're certainly kicking the ball a lot shorter. Was that something that Alistair has implemented 7 weeks ago?
Not really. I think it's just evolved. We were getting shut down a little bit with our kicking game, so had a little bit of focus on that. Last night we had a bit more of a focus on taking sort of a longer kick down the line, I guess, like a finals type atmosphere, like when Ruffy and Haley and Shuey, guys like that, McAvoy, are marking the ball well, then just taking the ground and if they mark it good and well, if not, get another stoppage or get it out of bounds and start again, because we know that you're not going to get those sort of uncontested marks in finals, and it's not going to be sort of that pressure-free game, I guess, like last night.
Luke, what have you done with your goal kicking? 2013, you set shots. Obviously, I see a fair bit of the Hawks, and you used to spray the old set shots a bit, and then last year you came out and you couldn't miss, and you've continued on that wonderful form. Did you make a conscious change to what you were doing in front of the sticks?
Not really, not in terms of my routine or anything. The only tweak I did have was for the longer shots, just getting a little bit more momentum through the footy, sort of around the 45-metre mark. I'm pretty comfortable, but outside of that, just trying to sort of nearly turn it into an on-the-run shot, I guess, and try and get those hips opened up and get some power through the ball so it wasn't fading. I've got a natural sort of left to right on me, so just trying to, get a little bit more power through the ball and so it'd hold its line a little bit better was probably the only thing. And I guess outside of that, just continue to work at training and have as many shots as I can so that no matter what situation you get put in on the field, that you can try and execute it.
Now, Clarko's the master at keeping guys on edge. Obviously, you had Hale and McAvoy playing in the ruck last night. Segler playing for Box Hill, who clearly is in pretty good form as well. Just seems to be rotating those through just to keep each one on the edge. And also Poppy starting as the sub last night. I tell you what, you don't want to play too well when you're the sub. Ooh. He came on, kicked three goals. you want to make sure that you don't perform in that position. But just keeping players on the edge.
Yeah, I guess it's a good thing to have. And early in the year when we were 4-4, we probably wouldn't have the luxury of starting Piopolo sub or being able to rest Stratton and Duray and Shields, guys like that, that have niggly little injuries that I guess they need to get right for finals. So having the luxury to do that now and being able to manage players throughout this second half of the year was only probably come about because we've had a few good wins over the last month.
Now, Duck, this man is also, as well as being a wonderful footballer, he's a renowned big wave surfer. Brewsty, have you been back in the water since I will call it the Fanning incident?
I have not, no. So my last surf would have been during the pre-season. So don't get to get in the water too much during the season. So, yeah, certainly I was watching it live when it happened and, yeah, it certainly shook me up a little bit. So, yeah, just so glad that he's okay and that both boys sort of got out of the water with no harm.
That's it. Talking about shook you up, we're now going to play you some audio, and this is a tricky game because you're on your mobile phone, but I want to see if you can identify this rather peculiar audio. Lukey, can you tell us what that was or not?
Well, it was that roughy shot at the hoop, and then James Frawley hit me in the head.
Yeah, that was it.
Would it be fair to say he booted the football into your head from about a metre away with the power of Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah, and thank God it wasn't a basketball or a soccer ball. It was one of those sort of soft, squishy balls that we used to have at school. So if it had been a harder one, I think I would have been knocked out on the floor.
You can see that on at DS Legends Twitter. It's there at the moment. Hey, Brewsty, we really appreciate your time. Have a wonderful weekend. May all go well for the Hawks and you get a nice end-of-season surf trip in as well.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Cruz for Ronaldo, who brings it down and makes it 2-0 to Real Madrid. It did cross the line and they're on fire, the Spanish Giants.
99,382 people will walk away last night saying they saw Cristiano Ronaldo score. Mark Howard, Wayne Carey, the Dead Set Legends on Triple M. Ducky, Real Madrid 4, Manchester City 1. While 25,000 were at Etihad seeing a very underwhelming game of AFL, there was 99.3. It was just an incredible crowd there.
Howie, I never thought, and talked to Bruce McAvaney after the game last night, and we were all discussing the crowd there and the crowd at the footy last night. Never thought in our lifetime would we see a game of AFL footy with two of the biggest clubs in Melbourne and a soccer game across the road drawing a crowd like that and AFL drawing a crowd like that. We thought we'd never see it.
A crowd four times as big. And our man from Fox Sports, who's the number one boy on Fox Sports, he's been at the golf, he's been at Wimbledon, he does more soccer than Ronaldo himself. He's Adam Peacock. He joins us on the line now. Hello, Coco.
But nowhere near as good as the bloke.
No, you're not, and you probably haven't as had much success off the field as he had as well, but you're still a good-looking man. Now tell us, 99,382 there last night. Take us into the atmosphere and the environment and what Melbourne saw last night, mate.
Yeah, it was an exhibition, basically, what we saw last night. But to see those guys, and especially that first hour when Real Madrid were humming and they had all their guns there, it was as good as any theatre show that you could go to, as good as any movie you'd go to. I mean, didn't have the intensity of, say, an AFL footy final or even an A-League grand final, but it was well worth whatever you paid to get in because these guys, we can only see them on television for 9 months of the year. To see them up close and in the flesh, we now know what all the fuss is about.
What was the atmosphere like? You've obviously been to an AFL grand final with that sort of crowd there, and when a goal's kicked or something big happens within the game, was it the same type of atmosphere?
No, it didn't have that edge. You know, when something's on the line, like a State of Origin or, as you say, an AFL grand final, there's an edge to it, and like it's intense. There wasn't quite that. It was hard to sum up because towards the end of it, everyone just started chucking paper planes on the field, which was
ridiculous. Tell us about that, mate, because that was I was at the footy and I saw some highlights, and it did. It looked like that paper planes movie. Where's that come from?
I don't know, but it's a plague. It's an absolute plague at the moment. I couldn't believe how many ended up on the pitch, and towards the end, it was just ridiculous how many planes were raining down from the top tiers of the Olympic stand and all those ones as well. I don't know where it started. Apparently it started in Europe, but I noticed that last year at a couple of games at ANZ Stadium here in Sydney. But I don't know where it's really taken off. So hopefully people get bored of it pretty soon because my son was actually sitting next to me and he's going, "Oh, Dad, look at these paper planes." I said,
buddy, Real Madrid are on the field in front of you. That's what we came here for, not that. So,
now, have you actually had a chance to sit down and interview Cristiano Ronaldo, great man, or not?
No, haven't.
Well, see, that's where we take it to the next level on this show. You might not have heard our exclusive. We can't replay the whole exclusive where Duck and I spoke to Cristiano last week. I'll just play a little bit of it to get you a bit of a feel for it. Cristiano, have you been blown away by the ratings that the Legends have been getting?
And, you know, the numbers speak for itself.
That's the type of exclusives we bring to the table on this show, great man.
Outstanding. Well done. I think you're up for a Walkley for that.
Yeah, we are. He has had a massive impact, though, hasn't he? And from what I can see, he's been really generous. They've had a sponsor organise things, but I've seen him in and out of the hotel where he's taken times and had women literally fainting in his arms, which is extraordinary to see. But he's been really good, mate. I think people will come away from this trip saying, well, he seems like a nice fella.
Yeah. The rub on him as a footballer is that he's very selfish. You saw the goal celebration last night, or you might have seen it on the replay. Yeah. He kind of jumps up in the air and presents himself to the crowd in a kind of way. So people say that he's not Messi because Messi will set up as many as he scores. Ronaldo is all about him. He'll wave his arms if he doesn't get the ball passed to him. But I think he gets the fact that he is a genuine superstar, and to act like a genuine superstar, there are certain things that go along with it. And he's very much of that. And yeah, the guy, it'll be the same if Messi came to this country. He's the best of anything. So we get down here, we love those types of people because we're used to the best of our sports that we watch week in, week out with rugby league and AFL. So when we see a worldwide superstar like this come to our shores, we absolutely love it. And he loves the attention. He knows how to handle it. And it's great to have him here.
Hey, mate, we appreciate your time. You're dominating, as always, on Fox Sports. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll speak to you soon on the Dead Set Legends.
I'm not going to dominate this afternoon. Let me see. I'm playing my first game of football in 5 weeks. It's going to be ugly.
Touch or soccer?
Soccer, yeah.
Twang.
Twang, yeah. Calves, hammies, everything. Twang. The whole thing.
Good on you, mate. Anyway. Appreciate your time.
See you, boys. Have a good one.
This is Dead Set Legends on Triple M. Thanks to Harvey Norman. Howie, what a massive week it's been. Last week, Mick Fanning. Come face to face with a great white shark. Now you love your surfing. You got to tell me, you haven't been in the water since you saw this vision, have you?
I have. I actually went for a surf the first time on Thursday. And without getting carried away, because we want to speak to Mick Fanning, I went out with Big Mark, the big wave rider from down the gym, and a couple of other boys, Big Brett, the ambulance man, and paddled out. And down our way, you just don't see things like that. And the first thing I saw as the first wave came, this massive flash of white in the water. And we've been talking about Fano, so you're a little bit edgy.
Well, of course you'd be talking about it.
Is that?
Everyone's talking about it.
And it's like that massive, hard to describe, when you just, it's like, you know, in Pulp Fiction where they get that adrenaline needle banging in his chest, and the adrenaline just, it was like that. The adrenaline just went bang, and I was like, what is that? And it was a dolphin.
Oh.
But this dolphin, honestly, it was like SeaWorld. It did a 4-metre jump in the air right in front of us. It was like it was laughing at us. It was, and I just thought about Fano at the time.
Just quickly on that, because apparently there was a dolphin scene not far from just before when they saw the white pointer. But I thought that if there were dolphins around, there weren't sharks around.
Two things about that. That's what surfers say to make themselves feel comfortable in the water when they see dolphins. And surfing at Jay Bay, I've surfed there and literally been 70 or 80 dolphins in the water.
So that's a myth.
No, absolutely, it's a myth. Okay. What do you think? A great white that's 5 metres long with teeth like is worried about a dolphin.
No, but dolphins worry about the sharks.
Yeah, that is a theory that people say. Listen, I was watching it, and honestly, when that wave came up and Fano disappeared, I had two thoughts. I thought, we're seeing an Australian sporting icon literally being killed live on television. And knowing his family a little bit, I knew his mum would be on the Gold Coast, and she's already had a son pass away, Sean, in a motor accident, which tore her life apart. I thought, she's sitting up there in her place on the Gold Coast watching her second son die on television. It made me want to vomit. But, you know, there's been so much spoken about it, and we'll speak to a guy at Jeffreys Bay later on the show after 11 o'clock to find out what has been happening in Jeffreys Bay since. But the thing that a lot of people haven't picked up, Duck, about there's a couple of things that have made it amazing. But as well as fighting the shark, the television coverage of it itself, they could have been on a wide shot. They could have been on a shot of the other surfer. The fact that they are on a tight shot of it occurring, which is why it was such a worldwide story. But the other thing a lot of people haven't picked up on, I reckon they went back to the studio shot, Duck, about probably 14 or 15 minutes after it actually occurred, no longer. And the blokes are sitting there. So Fano's been out of the water for 15 minutes. And in the back of the studio shot, you see three blokes running down the beach, and paddling out.
You're kidding me.
So with one bloke already out there. So there's been four blokes that have thought, Jay Bay is pumping. There's no one out there. This never That's happens. Crazy. I think the shark has buggered off. I'm going out for a surf.
I tell you what else got missed. Mm. There was a photographer, Kelly Sestari. Mm.
An in-water photographer.
Yeah, in-water photographer. So he's out there. Mick Fanning jumps on the back of the jet
ski. It's blown up.
Everyone comes in. He's left out there.
He was.
He had to swim 50 metres into shore to get back in. Everyone just forgot about him. He was.
And the most amazing thing, he was in a wetsuit and he had a camera, yet he broke Van and Hooger Manson world record for the 50 metres ducky. Frightening situation. Mick's been for a surf this morning. You know, he was never going to stop surfing. Gee, Red Bull did a good job too at the old press conference. Drinking cans, had it on their heads, on the hats, on the boards, the works.
Incredible.
Thankfully, Fanning is okay. Duck, a wonderful moment for the North Melbourne Football Club that you know and love, and the great Boomer Harvey, who plays game 400 this weekend. We already spoke to Michael Tuck and he said how difficult it is to play that many games of football. What are your first memories of the little man coming down to the Kangaroos when you were there?
Probably exactly that. He was a little man. Mm. 64 kilos, I think he was, Howie. So tiny. But he had a little bit of confidence about him. He was obviously very quick. And his first game, he only played the one game in 96. So he was trying to break into a side that was, pretty well established and, playing finals. So it was tough for him early. But... you know, he had a confidence about himself. He was, like I said, he was quick. And, I think I said during the week when I had a chat to him, he might be a little man, but he's a giant of the Kangaroos and will always be known to that. 400 games is quite incredible. I actually can't get my head around it, the fact that will anyone get there again? Let's be honest, there's four blokes in the last 150 years that have done it. So chances are no one will ever do it again.
There's been a lot of discussion in the last couple of weeks about Brad Scott and the fact that he'll sit down with Boomer at some stage. Explain to me, am I missing something here? But if he's fit and right to go next year, surely he's playing again at the Kangaroos. If he's fit and right to go.
Yeah, I think so.
He could break his leg next week and never play again, but touch wood, that never happens.
No, I think so, Howie. I think he's in the best four or five players still at the Kangaroos. No question about that. But I didn't put it in my article, but I had a chat to him about Brad. And I said, has Brad come back a lot harder after his four-week break after back surgery? And he said, without doubt, he's come back a lot stronger. So as his approach to the team. So he's gone away and evaluated a few things and felt that he needed to. But it's interesting because it was Boomer, I reckon, about 8 months ago, or it might have been a little bit longer ago, saying that that was the one thing that he thought Brad needed to be, and that was a little bit tougher. So he's come back with that in his mind, and that's the approach that he's having. And let's be honest, it's probably starting Boomer as a sub a couple of weeks ago, Lindsay Thomas being dropped. I mean, Luke McDonald hasn't been in the team. Mm. So, you know, he is being tougher, and that might, stand them in good stead for the finals coming up.
Something you could have left out of your article, but you didn't, and credit to you, because reading the article without it would have been a little bit strange, but you put it in there, and I quote to you, you've got the highs, the lows, leadership, and under lows, you've written, unfortunately, I'm central to one of Boomer's worst memories at North Melbourne. This is your article in The Age on Friday, my inglorious exit and how it impacted the club. We all wish things can change, but in this case, I've never really quite known how my actions affected some of the other guys in the team. The chat I had with Boomer this week was actually the first time I've had a meaningful conversation with him since that mess, and he said it left a hole at the club. Tough to hear that type of thing.
Howie, I've spent a lot of time dealing with all of that, so it wasn't tough. It was, I guess, refreshing in a way to speak to Boomer for the first time in that manner. And it's funny because I played probably 5 or 6 years with him, but at that time he's just a young kid trying to make his way. So although he had a confidence in his own ability, he probably wasn't outwardly spoken in amongst the group because there are a lot of other senior players. So to sit down with him for the first time since then and have a discussion and to hear him say that, it was...
What did he actually say?
Exactly what I wrote. So nothing more, nothing less.
That and, it was his low point it was, in the time
of
the footy club.
Yeah, well, he hasn't had too many low points. No. He's obviously missed finals and stuff like that, but he just said that was the toughest year on him as a player mentally because there was a lot of stuff going on. And, I respected him for saying that. And it was a great chat. I actually got a lot out of it. And I think the way he's handled this week, having so many interviews and listening to him speak for the first time a lot in the media, because you don't hear him a lot, I thought he's handled himself very well, and I think they'll account for Brisbane and send him off, not send him off, but carry him off in a very good fashion tonight.
And credit to the Kangaroos. It's a team game, and we don't like to pick out individuals for some reason. That's not what we do in Australian sport, like it or lump it. But I noticed that the Kangaroos have got Boomer down the central blue strip of the Kangaroos jumper. I think that's a wonderful thing, Ducky.
It is wonderful, and it comes off the back of Brad Scott saying we're not going to make a big deal of his 400th.
Hang on, Brad.
They've got his name on the jumper,
and so I'm pretty sure
that's a big deal. So, you're right. And I think that's the tough situation. Brad's been asked a lot of questions this week about Boomer. He's wanted to deflect it to the team rather than the individual. And to some people, that's come across like he hasn't shown Boomer the respect. I disagree. I think he's got a job to do. He's trying to do it. Most importantly, and Boomer's backed that up, most importantly for them, yes, it's Boomer's 400th. Yes, it should be celebrated. But more importantly than all of that, and Boomer will say this, they have to beat Brisbane. They haven't beaten them there since 2005.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast, brought to you by Harvey Norman's Bonus Wine Offer on Selected Electrical.